Friends, it's me, Leslie Mathis, with the Multifamily Streamline Podcast. So excited to be back here with Melanie Whitlock for her 90-day check-in on the road from RPM to asset manager. Buckle up, this one is a roller coaster ride I take us on with lots of twists and turns.
Well, hello, Melanie Whitlock. I'm so excited to be back here on your 90-day anniversary as an asset manager. I truly appreciate you entertaining this journey of following the transition from RPM to asset manager. And so we're going to do our 90-day check-in, and then maybe we won't come back for another 90 days. I don't know. We'll see how that plays out. But can you tell the listeners how the last 30 days has went?
It's still been amazing. I'm honestly surprised we're to the 90-day mark. It's felt longer, but really fast at the same time, and a great transition. It was really easy because I've worked with you before and worked with our partners before, but I've been learning a lot in this past 30 days, more than even to begin with.
That's awesome. I can't believe it's been 90 days to you. I mean, I definitely can relate with that. Like, I think because we've worked together for so long, it doesn't feel like it's only been 90 days, but then I don't know. I totally get that. But for me, it's been such a blessing to work with you one-on-one together. And gosh, I just think if we had time to share everything that was accomplished in the last 90 days, it's pretty amazing. But I mean, you always know that I say, like, you're so task-oriented, and even just down to, like, that's what amazes me about you. But even just now, like, we were downloading and I said, hey, can you put this analysis together? And I assumed like it would come over later this afternoon. And as we were chatting, you finished it and sent it to me. And like, I don't know how you do that. That's the most amazing thing to me about you. But maybe
so for the listeners out there, Leslie always tells me that I never let grass grow underneath my feet. It's a good and bad thing at the same time, because I'm working on my listening skills, but also my brain works so fast. I have to do multiple things at the same time. So,
yeah. And so I always say that I can't do multiple things. I actually say that people can't, multitask, but I think a few people have been proving me wrong. I like in that example right now, there is no way that I thought that you weren't listening to me. So you clearly could listen to what I had to say. Maybe it's a good thing I'm a talker, so it gave you time to do that. But then, I mean, I was shocked that while you stepped away from your computer, I had both pricing analysis in my inbox while we were talking. But even yesterday I was in a meeting, and again, I always say people can't multitask. And again, I mostly say that because I know I can't, but in this small group, two of the people agreed with me, but then they said, well, this developer, he totally can. And we're always amazed by it. Like, he can be listening on a call, participating on the call, sending an email. But then the other three of us were like, we can't do that. Like, I'm the one who like starts typing what I'm saying, and then it doesn't even make sense. Like, even it happened to me this morning, I walked past my dad and he was wishing somebody happy birthday. And then I walked into my son's room and I was like, I wanted to say good morning and I wished him happy birthday. And his birthday is not until July. I was like, no, that's not right. So anyway, so maybe you two are converting me into, there are some people who can multitask, but it's rare. It's rare.
As long as you're good at it. Some, you just have to know whether or not you can. If you make too many mistakes, then you know you need to focus.
Exactly. And maybe it just really depends on the task. Like, we weren't talking about anything like super in depth. Like, I was sharing with you. And so, it made sense. So, and I wasn't surprised. So even though that was a little bit of a tangent, we'll get back on topic. So, you know, we always have, like, in the other two episodes, we talked about like the good, bad, and the ugly. So why don't we do the good first? Like, what's been the best the last 30 days, or even 90 if it's the whole time, but tell us the good.
Well, we have been making huge strides in our reporting packages. And I think that was one of your biggest goals, having me come onto the team, is to, you know, streamline those processes, make sure that every partner that we work with has the same type of reporting package week over week. If somebody wants to compare notes, it's the same data. But, you know, it's still customizable. And I had a great call with one of the partners the other day in regards to how he wanted to do a financial analysis of where we think rents are going to land versus what we budgeted. And he just taught me a different way to look at that. And I think that's what's really cool about this business, is our minds work so differently. And if you take the time to really, you know, learn from somebody that's been in the business for so long, you can process the way our industry works in multifaceted ways.
I 100% agree. I've said for the last 7 years, the piece that I miss the most is the collaboration. And so, you know, even in most aspects, and I think that's was the thing I was so excited to have you come on board in both positions, is really the collaboration. And I mean, I knew early in my career that I was more of the visionary and the big picture, and didn't mind having the hard conversations or problem solving, but I am not task oriented, and I am not, it's really those tasks, like the small tasks, that it's almost even like that quote of death by a thousand paper cuts. Like, it just, like, that's not my strength. Putting a leasing file together is not my strength. Doing an audit is not my strength. Like, it just, it's like misery to me. But I think when you find people that strengthen your weaknesses, you're just are so much more powerful together. And then also, it's, there's just something beautiful about collaboration and learning from other people. And I think when we're open-minded to that is when we grow the most. And so, you know, when you don't work in an office with people, you lose that component. And it's really hard, especially when you work with lean companies, it's hard to have that piece. So I agree. Like, it's just, collaboration is just amazing. And I think the more you can do of it, whether you're on site or with your team, a portfolio manager, it just, you can do so much more when you look at the big picture from a couple different angles.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of companies, we talk about diversifying our employee base, and people, you know, don't take it as seriously, I think, as they need to. But that's 100% where you have to look at it, is collaboration comes from a set of individuals that aren't like-minded. You know, they may have the same goals in mind, but how they process those procedures looks very differently. And I think that's how you get a more well-rounded business, is when you don't have the same mindset. It's like, you're not a bean counter, but we have a lot of partners that are bean counters. And you have you, who's very idealistic and creative. And then we have people that are more marketing minded, or, you know, design minded. And that's how these great projects that we work on come together, is because we have, you know, tried to create teams that help us think outside of the box, and, you know, creating an experience from the first time the dirt moves to a prospect walks in the door.
Yeah, exactly. And I think when we work in groups and collaborate, we also all think of things a little differently. And that also helps us from having the misses that often do happen, even in development or operations or whatever we're working on, truly. And I think one way that I learned this too is when I started teaching my class Through the Eyes of an Asset Manager, we spend this time in the very beginning talking about what our superpower is, and it's a secret. Like, what's the thing about yourself that people don't know? And I always encourage them to go back on site or within their portfolio to do the same task, because what I learned in leading teams was that lots of people have these super talents that you don't know anything about. And some of them might be beneficial on site or in your portfolio. I have a maintenance supervisor today on an asset who is just this gem of a guy who, if somebody wouldn't have taken the time to get to know him and understand his talents, like, we would have really missed out. He could have just done his job and been this great maintenance supervisor or whatever you call that title, but he's so much more. He takes time to walk the neighborhood and understand, like, where should a resident walk their dog? Cause it's a very urban site and we don't have a dog park, like, but there's a park literally right next door to us. And you walk through that park and there's another park and he can tell you all about that. But even the coolest thing is on his personal time, he's a DJ and he curated our music list that plays in the clubhouse and the amenity space. And it is so on brand. Like, he dresses the brand, like, he is so ingrained in part of the team and he's always coming up with these ideas. But if somebody didn't take the time to understand his strengths, like, we would have completely missed out on this great part of creating the experience on this specific deal. It's amazing if we just ask the question and are open-minded to having other feedback on any project.
And that's who you want to work for, because they make you better. And, you know, we were talking about starting our motivational emails, and y'all, if any listener out there, y'all subscribe once we get to that point. And a recent quote that we were, or what I was talking about, but surrounding yourself with people that make you better. And based on your meeting with Patrick this week, it just continues to go in that direction. And he's not going to stop until he reaches a goal where that community is better than where it was when he started.
Yeah, I love it. So that's been the good. Any challenges over the last 30 or 90 days?
There's always challenges in every job. You're not doing something right if you don't have at least some challenge. But it's funny because I was thinking about this the other day on certain classes that we could teach, and I had this idea. Somebody quote me on it because I want to make millions off of it one day. But I call it the multifamily Bermuda Triangle. And if you take the three points of a triangle and you put development or ownership, property management, and construction, and the three of them working together in communication, that's like, I don't know what happens. It's a mysterious communication drop between the three of them sometimes. And I would love to bring on, you know, we can even talk to my husband during this process, but we're working on a deal right now where that triangle of communication just absolutely failed. And I think that we can learn a lot from it, and we are learning from it. And I think it's great because it's going to take that lessons learned into future projects with, you know, multiple different people. But what's cool about it is like finding the mistakes and then putting it on paper. Like, you and I talk about white paper studies all the time. Take this and learn from it, write it down, and share it with people so that we can continue to progress in the industry. So the good, bad, and the ugly all together, I think it's been cool to watch us progress towards our goal on this particular project. And it turned out to be better than I think what we could have thought 3 months ago.
Oh my gosh. So I haven't heard that from you, but I think it's the smartest thing, maybe the smartest thing I've heard this year and maybe even last year, but it's amazing. And so I think, you know, maybe people don't know, but so much of what we work on is new development. But there's always this struggle, especially close to delivery time, and it's the communication. And things have really changed over the last couple of years, where even some of the best of the best GCs and architects and developers and management companies, like, we had a stride and things were going really well. And then things have really changed. And it's like, it's just, I said it yesterday, like it's hard to get a TCO and a CO today. And now we're checking all these boxes to get it, but they're still not ready for our leasing team when we get it. And that's where some of my biggest mistakes have happened in the last several months is always before TCO, first move-ins, like all those dates, like, man, I was ready to go. It doesn't mean that anymore. And I do believe if you could figure out how to solve that communication gap, it would really change our industry in a meaningful way. Our pipelines are robust. I mean, in just studying the Nashville market, you know, they keep saying we have 13,000 units coming, and we all know they're not coming this year, no matter what any date on that pipeline says. But even if 6,000 of them deliver this year, or 4,000, like, I just think about the 500 units we've delivered in the last 60 days, how challenging that's been. You know, think about 3,000-4,000 units being delivered into a market and the challenges that arise. So I hope you figure out the Bermuda Triangle of construction, property management, and development. There's probably several of them, right?
Well, you know, if you do research on the Bermuda, it's all mysterious disappearances. Well, that's like, you know, you're in a meeting and communication comes out of nowhere from property management that heard it from construction, and you've never heard of this before in your life. And you're sitting there and you're wondering, why did somebody get left out in the process? And I think that's because we don't sit down between the three. It's either two people are leaving one corner out or one's leaving two out. So how do we fix that from the day that we start talking about a project to the end? Because, you know, when you have too many hands in the pot, that's what people think is like, oh, well, you're over communicating to the point where there's too many opinions. But I think it's just a knowledge base of, hey, if that's the decision development wants to make, great. Let's inform the other team or vice versa. So just over communicating to the sense that it's more or less we know what the goal is from day one versus it changing on day 1,000.
Yeah, I think you literally just said it too, is, you know, the development team can't be there day in and day out. And about the time that management comes in, management is, and it's a small, like, you know, like a manager and a maintenance supervisor walking with the lead punch guy or maybe the superintendent. And so it's four people in units, in amenity space, having conversations, and it never gets out to the rest of us. I mean, I can think of so many examples of this right now that somehow you've got to, like you said, filter that information, but it's probably, it's more than the text group we've created in the past. I think about a renovation project. The last one I had when I was with a property management company, and then when I went out on my own, I helped clients in the very beginning with renovation projects because it just was something it came naturally to me. But we were working with a IT company to develop this text, almost like a Salesforce type app where all communication was streamlined through there. And then you could see the schedule, you could see where they were at on the schedule, but it was all in an app. And I don't even know what happened with that. I don't even remember what the name of it was, but it's almost like you need something like that. But then it's this training component to make sure that everybody uses it. But it's a problem that needs to be solved.
And I think because everyone we work with uses a different platform for communication, that's what makes it difficult. So maybe you and I work on, you know, designing a software that creates the solution.
Oh, I hope I get to be part of that. Even if I can just have a trickle of your millions of dollars, that would make me happy.
Right.
I don't know. I think you're onto something, and that's pretty amazing. Isn't it funny how like struggles can turn into something that's beautiful and life-changing and industry-changing? I know you're not there yet, but if you look back over like challenges and struggles that shape you, it always, or it, when you look back at the things that shape you, it typically goes back to a pain point that, you know, the grit and the friction create this beautiful pearl.
Well, I've been blessed enough, you know, having Drew on the construction side. I've been in RPM.
That's her husband.
Sorry for those that don't know. I've been on the property management side, and now I'm on the development side. So I see every point of that triangle and the frustrations from all three. And everyone's valid in their frustrations, but like, how do we get past that to better work together as a team? Because development can't do any of this without construction and property management. And property management, construction don't have jobs without us chasing after new assets. So it's never going to change. The triangle is there to say, but how do we make that triangle communication not what it is today?
100%. And I love that. Yeah, it just, you know, in opening, I don't even know what the number is because I never keep up with it. But, you know, I think we've opened 6 projects in the last 90 days that were all delayed about 6 months. And, you know, there's been these challenges that just truly are out of people's control, like switch gears and water hookups and sewers and these things. Like, a lot of it's stemming around utilities today, but, and there's this sensitivity too, like when operations ask construction, hey, what's the update on the schedule? And you can hear their frustration because they take that as like, oh my gosh, the leasing girl's nagging me again, but I don't know the answers. But what I've realized through that is all of these pain points that we have and challenges in delivery and getting TCOs and COs, a lot of it's just out of our control. But if we would sit down and talk about it, then probably people wouldn't be as frustrated when you ask the question. And, you know, even when we have a miss and there's no internet in the clubhouse for our teams to work with, you know, everybody just seems so sensitive today that we can't have these conversations. So, but if we were sitting down and talking more, had a way to streamline the communication, maybe it would take some of those pressures off. And then we're just still all rowing in the same direction, trying to get it done. And I think that's everybody's intent, but because there's so much pressure and so much, you know, so many challenges out of people's hands, the communication gets hindered because, again, everybody's frustrated.
All leads down to the pressure. And, you know, I think the triangle right now, every point of that is growing to the point where I don't even know if it's sustainable. So from construction to, you know, the management groups that we work with, like, we're taking on more and more business and, you know, the partners we work with, it's crazy amounts of work, but you have to look at it as you take it when the getting's good. And that's what I think everybody's capitalizing on now. So it's, you know, it's a good and bad thing at the same time.
Well, and maybe to your point, a lot of it is that, and now it's coming to fruition and there's challenges that we've never had before that just kind of magnify the issues.
Exactly.
I'm glad you said that. So kind of segueing off of that, I've been talking about it a lot of, you know, this year alone is going to be challenging. And so I think we've recognized the challenges with construction and development and kind of hit on some for the management teams. But even just thinking through how our GC and architects, like, we all weren't prepared for some of these challenges we faced. I think on the operations side, we're not ready for some of the challenges coming ahead. And I keep saying it, and I think you agree that this year is going to be about getting back to the basics of operations. But then, as we've talked about it, people have pointed out to us, I've always said we're coming off of 18 months of good, but the you know, leaders in the industry say we're really coming off of 10 years of just this amazing multifamily ride. And when we look at kind of who's leading the charge on day-to-day operations, a lot of those folks haven't even been in the industry more than 10 years. And so they don't know the challenges that came with a downturn, and they don't know the challenges we had with certain things 15 years ago. So how do you think we prepare those team members that haven't experienced a downturn to really get back to the basics when they don't even know what that means for somebody who's a little more seasoned?
Boy, a lot of people could say that about myself. You know, I've been in the industry as of April will be 7 years, but prior to that, I did college housing. And I think it was, you know, right around that time I was leasing up Cooper River Farms. We were offering 2 months free. You know, Charleston was just now seeing some of that boom. And I think I was trained really well to kind of face that because we had just really, I think even as Woodfill started focusing on the experiential part of the business, and, you know, it was wardrobes and how are we going to set ourselves apart? Like, instead of offering concessions, we're going to start offering, you know, services, and going back to the basics is one thing, and, you know, standing up and greeting and all those things that property management teaches us. But what you and I have really come to talk about when we had our meetings with property management was, hey, let's focus more on the communication, pulling data, analyzing that data, putting it in a format that's, you know, easily or really easy for asset management to take a look at, take it to the partners. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to implement it fast enough that we're not being retroactive. And all of that back to the basics should already be in place. You know, that's something that property management has got to train and train daily. But creating a manager and an RPM that's got the best of communication, and good Lord, we're going to talk about communication. How many times have we said this on the podcast? But that's 100% what it comes down to, is that we're not asking for a plan in place for the next 30 days. It's already been approved. We're not going to sit back and wait for our trend to drop or wait for those 5 leases that need to come in this weekend, and we're already at Thursday and don't have them. We've already got a plan in place.
Exactly. And I think you'll be a great example, and maybe we talk about this on another one of, you know, what has your experience been the last 7 years and what does the basics mean to you? I think when I go back to the last 18 months, I mean, we were just all trying to struggle to get by, and things were moving so fast that I don't know that, you know, our teams are prepared to pivot or create strategic plans. And you're 100% right. It always comes down to people and communication. Lots of times they're doing things on site that we don't even know about. And if we just knew, then we would have more confidence around where we're headed. And also just having plans in place. Like, I think that's what we've missed the last 18 months, because it was so good. And we didn't have to pivot, and we didn't have to put a strategic plan together, because again, everything was just so high. Like, rates were high, occupancies were high, like trend was high, traffic was high, like everything was just plentiful. And now we're just seeing a downturn to that. And I think that was a really good point you made too, of like, when we say get back to the basics, it doesn't mean like stand and greet. And no, it means like, today, you are going to have to follow up 3 times within 72 hours, because people have a lot of choices today. And if you haven't set yourself apart from your competitor, if you haven't shopped your competitor, you don't even know what you're selling against. Like, that's one of the basics of just knowing your competition, knowing what's going on in the market. We didn't have to know that 9 months ago. Because again, people were coming through our door and leasing. They were watching our website like the stock market. And as soon as a unit came available, they were leasing it because they didn't have time to wait for somebody to call them. Like, they were doing it themselves. And that's what's changed. And So I think maybe that's a tangent on my part, but it's such a great, you know, kind of preparation for like what we have to do for 23. And maybe 23 won't be as bad as I worry about, but if we start doing all of these things now, we can change it, and maybe we can head it off before it even gets there.
Well, people have to understand in general, it's not just our industry. You know, you can take it outside the box and big picture. The car industry is the same thing. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day. You never paid MSRP for a car. You walked in, you made a deal, you got $3,000-$4,000 cut off. Now it's, you're chasing a car from a different city. You're paying exactly full price. You've got to put a deposit down before you even get there, before somebody else does. So changing people as a consumer, we're changed our mindsets because of COVID, and it applies across the board. So if you take that into consideration of how we run our business, think about it that way. Like, you're, people aren't going to be chasing after apartments like they were before because they have more options. The housing market's not as crazy. Like, they're thinking about things more intentionally and where they're going to put their money. And you have to provide the best experience and give them confidence in their financial decision, because they're thinking about things holistically more now than they were 365 days ago.
Yeah, I don't even think people were thinking. They were just like, I've got to have it, so I'm going to figure it out, and it's mine. I have to have it. And you're right. Like, all of that slowed down. Even like, I know you recently bought a new car, and I tried to for a year. Like, we joke about it. I had a deposit on a car for a year that never came to fruition. And, but now, interestingly, that's just such a good example where I was constantly having to follow up any word. Now they are starting to have some coming off the line and coming to a local dealership, and they're calling me about it now. Do you still want this? Are you still interested? And I kind of gave up on it. I was just like, well, I'll just drive Betty White forever. And but it's such a good example that they're experiencing the same thing. Like, now, you know, they need to get back to the basics. They're actually having to follow up. And I mean, for months, I would never hear from them. And now I hear from them like kind of weekly. So that's a great example of, it's not just us. And maybe that gives some people some comfort. Like, it's not just apartments, it's everyone. So, you know, maybe this isn't fair, but I'll go ahead and ask you. You and I have spent a lot of time over the years just learning to sell without concessions and leading with price. And now we've offered this concession class, and we've taught it 3 or 4 times, and it's been amazing. How do we shift that mindset for folks that, you know, we didn't sell with concessions, we saw some increase for, like, you know, in most markets, 12 to 18 months, we didn't offer concessions. We were doing all this, you know, crazy rents and crazy renewal increases. And then some markets saw some dip in trends that happened pretty quick going into the fourth quarter. And the first thing they did was they threw concessions at it. So, knowing what's happened, knowing the timing of all the good, the high of the industry, the last 18 months, how do you go into some of these struggles without offering concessions, without leading with price? Like, how do you shift that mentality? What would you tell somebody, since you've experienced that and that was the way you did lease-ups for so long? What is your, you know, advice for them of how to shift this mindset, and that we don't have to just offer concessions right out of the gate?
Well, you and I have even talked about in that class that it's not that it's never a no, but we're going to exacerbate every possible option before we get to that point. And that's looking at marketing. That's looking at the team and what the experience looks like. That's, you know, going at it from social media, going at it from how we're calling people, how we're emailing people. And there's multiple different ways to do it without concessions, whether, you know, you're looking at net effect of rents, or you're taking that data and doing a pricing analysis and getting down to the core of what the issue is, because pricing always can't be the problem. And yeah, even us as developers, we know that we're going to have to take a step back. But at the end of the day, what is the point if everybody, all 10 of you, are offering 2 months free? It nets out to be the same exact thing. So what's the point? Like, in the end, you're going to end up having to chase that money from either delinquency or renewal standpoint. So let's take a look at the front end of that and how that we can get the demographic that we want that's not searching for something free. Because, yeah, there's penny chasers out there that have to do that. We understand that. But how we're going to value our product from day one has to carry out throughout the end of the year or the end of the lease up. And one of the, you know, light bulb moments that I have for myself in teaching that class was when I thought about it from a retail perspective and taking Gucci, taking Louis Vuitton, taking these high-end retailers that never go on sale. They have created a brand that they understand the value and they're not going to deplete that value. So why can't we as operators take that same mindset and not, you know, that we never can take a loss leader or take a dip in pricing, but we understand that this is where our pricing should land. This is where we value the product. And we're not going to shift from that. And anybody that walks through the door gets that Gucci experience and they understand why we charge what we charge.
I agree. That is 100% my love language. I think the retail is the greatest example. And really, you know, the first deal that we did without concessions at the Green in Greenville was the exact approach we took, and that we were able to give the team confidence around that of, well, yeah, maybe you're not going to get a special, but this is everything you're going to get. And I think it goes back to the point, like when we sell without leading with price and concessions, we have to be pretty on our game, and there's not a lot of room for error because the expectations are higher, but the rewards are greater too, because it ends up in a stronger rent roll, which means more value to the asset. It ends up with a stickier resident with less turnover. And I always say too, like, you're going to do the work one way or the other. Let's just do it on the front end and make it easier as we stabilize. So, you know, and I think when we can give people confidence in the tools, like maybe it's through the class or, you know, leading by example, when they start seeing it, then that's when the light bulb really goes off and they start buying into that. So I also equate it to technology. Like, we worked so hard at the beginning of COVID to adopt 6 years of technology in 6 months. Like, let's not go back to the old ways of doing things. And I feel like sales is the same thing. And maybe we, to your point, need to continue to look outside our industry for examples to give us that confidence and boost.
Well, we have to take it back to, it's just like you said, sales. That's the position that we're in. We build something, we create something to sell it. So why not take it from people, you know, retailers are a prime example. They come up with different ways to market every day, whether, you know, we have marketing people on our side, but I think we look at it more as a weekly and monthly thing where they're looking more at daily trends of where retail markets are going. So using that as an example, in which we do it with revenue management on a smaller scale, but taking that to another level, I think is a cool idea to look at.
And, you know, no pressure, Melanie, but maybe your solution to the Bermuda Triangle will help in this, because maybe if we looked at what was going on in markets, a lot of it's driven by new product and the challenges in delivery. And so it just becomes this like, okay, let's just throw concessions at it. But maybe if we're solving to how to deliver the best product, I don't know that we'll ever do it on time again. I'm not sure what that really looks like, but maybe if you solve the Bermuda Triangle of delivery, then it will help our teams really buy into the strategy of selling from an experience versus price or concessions.
Agreed.
All right. So this was a lot of hodgepodge. I got us off on some wild topics, but I'm so excited for you. And it's been so fun watching your transition from RPM to asset manager, and I think it has been a pretty seamless transition, but I think it's a hard one for most people because it's so different from an RPM to an asset manager, but you just have done it so well. So I appreciate all your time and I appreciate you entertaining this path down sales and basics, and I really appreciate this idea you have. So I hope you pursue it for sure. And I hope I get to be part of that because you're so smart.
Absolutely. I think we've got a lot to learn for the rest of our lives. So I'm here for it.
All right. Thank you so much. And we'll see you back here soon.
Thanks, listeners. Thanks, Leslie. Talk to you later.
See you back here next week with more thoughts on concessions. Thanks for joining Melanie and I in entertaining our rabbit hole, shiny object approach this week.